We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From the Mobile Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones, Adam here with you. Adam, what a weekend in Chapel Hill. Are you worn out? Have you recovered?
I'm exhausted.
It was a, man, there was just so much going on. Thursday, women's soccer gets the win over NC State. Then Friday, you had the dedication of the Media and Communication Center. You had the Fast Break Against Cancer breakfast. You had late-night men's soccer competed on Friday. You had the unbelievable football game, which, of course, we're going to talk about on Saturday. Then Sunday, you have Dorrance Field getting, I was going to say nominated. I guess that's not quite the right term.
Dedicated.
Thank you, Adam.
But I'd like to nominate it for the best pitch in the country for college soccer.
That's right, college football. So just a great weekend in Chapel Hill. A lot of it was positive. And, Adam, what a Saturday in Keenan Stadium. I can never remember a game that the Tar Heels didn't win that you left feeling more positive from than Saturday against Clemson.
1990 Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
It was the 1990 Georgia Tech game, except the rules have changed.
Yeah.
If the rules hadn't changed, you just kick the extra point, and of course the defense shuts them down in that final minute 14, and you walk out of there with a tie. It's the exact same game.
So we're going to talk about the Clemson game. We're going to talk about late night. Adam's been to some basketball practices. He has some nuggets. We're going to talk about that. And we have, Adam, going a little different direction with our guest today. Interim Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz is our guest. Of course, has a long history with athletics, which we'll discuss. And really enjoyed our discussion with, I'm just going to say Chancellor, Adam. I'm not even going to say Interim Chancellor. Really enjoyed our discussion with the Chancellor.
He is such an interesting person apart from his role at the university. And I was glad he was able to talk some about that. But just as when we had Chancellor Carol Folt on back in the spring, I also liked hearing about some of the university things that we don't normally think about that either do or indirectly touch athletics.
So all of that coming up. Before we get to it, rev up your tractor, Adam. Don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action this year. You can let LS Tractor help make short work of them. From normal yard maintenance to those bigger projects as well, LS Tractor has the machine for you. Visit lstractor.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? That's the question they want to know the answer to, because they'll help you once they find out, Adam. Mowing your grass, they got that. Tilling land, got that too. LS Tractor, proud partner of the Tar Heels. Adam, 3:30, Keenan Stadium, Saturday, Carolina Clemson. What an atmosphere. What a game. The Tar Heels come up just short, but what a performance from Carolina. It was a terrific effort that unfortunately didn't go the way you wanted at the end.
But you got everything else possible out of that game.
Yes.
From a Tar Heel football program perspective, you got 99% of what, if you had woken up on Saturday morning, here's what we need, you'd gotten everything except the win. And just Clemson is exactly as good as we thought they were. I don't think you walked out of there going, oh, well, Clemson's not as good. They are good.
Yeah.
But for that 3.5 hour period, Carolina was close to being that good.
It comes down to wins and losses, and that's the end of the day. And when the scoreboards, when you look at this one 5 years from now, it's going to say 21-20. And even I've gotten angry emails from people about Carolina losing the game and how you shouldn't be happy about this game. And Mac Brown has been very adamant about, hey, this program needs to start winning. And he said, and there aren't moral victories. And I think very confidently so that he, and by confidence, I mean his confidence is, this isn't, this program, this team isn't about moral wins or chip on the shoulder or feel good because you were close. That's not what he's about or what he wants his team to be about. So I do think you have to find the balance, Adam, of understanding that you did not win the game, but that there is something to take out of it that's positive. And I think that's what, coming out of this game, that's what it's about for the Tar Heels. Understanding all the positives, but also understanding you didn't finish and that that's frustrating, but that there was a lot of good that came out of it.
I think if you're in the camp of you can only be happy if you win the game, then you're in denial about where the program was at the start of the year.
Yes, that's a good point.
Because where the program was at the start of the year, you just need to compete. You need, and not just with Clemson, but with everybody. You need to compete with everybody from Mercer to the New England Patriots. And Clemson's closer to the Patriots. And that's what Carolina did. You need to have some sort of hope that on every single Saturday, the Tar Heels have got a chance to win the game. And it's not just one step from there to Tar Heels should win every game. Carolina's not there yet. Maybe next year, maybe. Don't know. Maybe the year after that. But they're still in the stage of the program in which you've got to be competitive with the best teams. You've got to give younger players around the country a reason to believe that you can get there. And that's what Carolina did on Saturday. Would have much rather won the game. But if you can't win the game, you got everything else you wanted. And you serve notice. How much positive national press did Carolina get from losing? They got more positive national press from losing 21-20 than they've gotten in the past couple of years put together for anything. Just for being competitive and being one play away. That's what you try to do.
This was not Judgment Day versus Florida State in 97. That's a game where you're the whole basis of how you feel coming out of that game is whether you win or lose.
Right.
This was not that. And so, yes, I agree with what you said. I think Carolina has to feel good about what happened in total with still understanding that you were right there. Right there from what could have been. It would have been the biggest win, I think, in Carolina football history, at least from the – we know it would have been from the ranking perspective because of your oddly confusing five-second challenge from the other day.
I have gotten so much heat from that from both family members and non-family members that have said that was a terrible one. And I said, well, Jones agrees. He told me that at the time, and you now are telling me that now. Like, even my wife was like, you did a terrible job with that. I'm like, well, I love you, wife.
Wife, I love you. I love you, wife. I think, Adam, and I think you wrote this in your reactions column on Go Heels after the game. Mac Brown, again, with the perfect, just the perfect thing to say at the perfect time. And I don't know if he said it in the full media, but I know he said it with us on the Tar Heel Sports Network. That when he, what he said to recruits of, and I think he was, in the sense that he was telling this story, it was before the game, which was Clemson's the best in the country right now. We're going to go out there and compete with them. we're going to be what they are in a couple years, and you're going to be a big part of the reason why we get there. Yeah. And then how much more does that message resonate when you then go and do what the Tar Heels did, and you can go, look, are you – you think you're worth 2 points to us? I think you are. 2 points wins this game. And so the atmosphere was incredible, and there were a lot of Clemson fans there, as you and I said that there likely would be. But it was an it was a home field advantage for Carolina. It felt like it felt like what you want your Saturdays in your stadium to feel like. A big game, two teams going at it. It felt like you want Saturdays to feel.
Five false start penalties for the Clemson offense.
And that's an old offensive line. They have one sophomore and the rest of them are seniors or graduates.
That had something to do with the crowd. If you go back and watch it on TV, Greg McElroy, who did the game for ABC, talked about how this Keenan Stadium crowd was in just a completely different category than any he had seen before. And that's a guy who played in the SEC. He knows what a good atmosphere is about. So it's possible. And what you said about what Mac Brown said, I mean, he's just good. He's just good. He's just good at being a football coach. I think that now we're able to say that because it's exactly like you said, Carolina's 1 point away. He can go to any player who was there that day who's a high school prospect and make them believe Tar Heels are one player away and you're that guy. You come here. If you lose 51-20, you've got to persuade a whole class. We need you, and we need you to get five of your friends, and we'll come here, and we'll be as good as Clemson. But 1 point, you can look at them, and is there anyone who doesn't believe Mac Brown can make people feel that they're that one person?
Right.
They're that one person who can completely make the difference? They're the one who can be the one, Jones?
Yep.
He can do that. And he got all the ammunition he needed as long as the trajectory of the season continues in that way.
Well, and you're not going to be able to see this because we're not quite yet in brand new Pod World headquarters where I'm sure we'll have 47 drones flying over our heads while we're recording the pod. But on Monday, Mac Brown had his normal weekly press conference. Then he and I sit down and do some stuff that we push out for social channels. And he did this hand motion about 10 times during those two sequences where he said, we need to be doing this. And he kept, and he did the upward trajectory, not this. And then he was doing kind of the wave motion with his arm where, and he's right. I mean, that's right now, Carolina is still too much up and down. And that's why this upcoming game against Georgia Tech is to me, not just because it's the next game, it's the biggest game of the year right now for Carolina. It's going to determine, I think, it goes a long way to your bowl chances. It goes a long way to show if this team is growing up some. It just, it's an important game for a lot of different reasons. Is this, can this team now handle, I'm going to say success, even though they lost, and not go, Georgia Tech's 1-3, well, that's, we'll go in there, then no big deal. Because it is a big, Carolina's not, Carolina can't say that about anybody. And so do they go in with that same level of intensity, execution, all the things that it had Saturday, that it had against Miami, that it had against South Carolina. Because if it does that, Carolina has a good chance to win this game. But if it shows up like it did against Wake or App, it doesn't. It's going to be the exact same story. And so where is this team in that regard is going to be really important.
And, of course, we'll talk more about Georgia Tech later this week. But as long as Carolina can get a reasonably full complement of players on the field on Saturday, I really think the Tar Heels can put the hammer on the Jackets because Mac Brown's got all the proof he needs. If you guys don't show up, it's going to be Wake Forest. I think, and we talked about this some off the air, what a difference did it make to have Charlie Heck against Clemson when you didn't have him against Appalachian?
Yeah.
That one player may have made the difference. That goes to Carolina's depth or lack of that we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the one guy at left tackle to protect that quarterback's blind side, and it may cost you the game, and it kept you in the game against Clemson. It kept Sam Howell relatively mobile and upright, which is what you needed to stay in the game. The Tar Heels need to try to get as many healthy bodies on the field as they can, but they have shown they have shown the upper end, I think, of what they're capable of. But they have also shown the lower end of what they're capable of. Now I'm doing some hand motions. boy, the pod drones are going to be awesome. If they can stay towards the upper end, they have a very good chance to go to a bowl game, and they've got a chance to compete in the Coastal. who else have you seen? Virginia appears to be the best team in the Coastal. Other than that, who have you seen that you think clearly is better than Carolina at the upper end?
Right. Okay, the game itself. Couple things I thought were important for the Tar Heels. Carolina ran the ball really effectively. Even, I mean, the yardage total wasn't enormous, 146, but they ran it better than Clemson did. They ran it in the middle of the line. They were aggressive. Brian talks about that all the time, Brian Simmons, on our analyst, of course, on the radio network, about how the downhill running and not side-to-side running. And I thought that was a big part of Carolina being successful. They stayed in front of the chains for the most part. Now, they had some three and outs because Clemson's defense is really good. So I thought that was their ability to run the ball, I thought, was key. And there was a stretch there in the third quarter where the game was tied at 14, where Carolina was actively just trying to take over running the ball. And it was like they would do it for a couple of first downs, and then they'd maybe have a negative yardage play, and they couldn't quite do it 100%. But they were showing that it was almost there. To me, though, Adam, the story of the game on the field was Carolina's defense. I mean, to hold Clemson, who came in averaging 525 yards and 42 points, and they held the Tigers to 331 yards and 21 points, I thought it was a masterful defensive effort from Carolina. I thought they made Trevor Lawrence actually look a little bit confused at times. They got pressure on Trevor Lawrence. And by the way, that dude is so good. I mean, the touchdown throw we had, Carolina had a breakdown in the secondary. They didn't have the coverage right. But even with that, Chad Surratt recovered to help out on a play where somebody else did something wrong, and it was still just dropped right in there perfectly. On the touchdown drive right before halftime, looked like Carolina had him sacked, rolled out to the left somehow and completed the pass. I mean, just a really, really good player, which isn't breaking news. But even though I thought Carolina gave him trouble, he still flashed it why he's so good. Carolina, I thought, bottled up the run game reasonably well. Clemson ran for 125 yards. They had run for 200-plus yards, something like nine consecutive games or something. They broke a streak. Clemson had an interception in, I think it was, eight straight games. Carolina did not throw, did not have a turnover. The Tar Heels did so many things right on the field, even though it wasn't perfect. But the defense, to me, is what stood out. Carolina's defense was, I thought, really, really impressive.
In addition to the no turnovers, I think just three penalties for 20 yards.
Yeah, Carolina's in the top 15 now nationally in penalty yardage per game, and that's after that first game where they had 90 against South Carolina.
What a pleasant change.
Yes.
And something Mack Brown talked about wanting to fix. As far as the defense goes, I thought it was interesting what Mack Brown said to you, I think after the game, that basically the coaches decided, we're going to put some young guys out there, but we're not going to hide them.
Yeah, Storm Duck started.
Yeah.
Cameron Kelly started. Tamari Fox for the second straight week started.
And I think what he said was, we decided we're just going to be us. So they're going to put these young players in this position, and they're going to tell Jay Bateman, coach them like they know what they're doing, whether they do or not. And that's what he did, and it worked. Now, there's going to be a time or two where teams are going to catch Carolina in some weird blitz, or Storm Duck's going to get confused and go the wrong way, which happened, or something like that, and another team's going to hit a big play, and everybody's going to get all frustrated and say, oh, what's wrong with this defense? Well, it's that they're young and don't really know what they're doing and weren't expecting to be doing it at this time in their Tar Heel careers. But I think from a program perspective, one of the big things about Jay Bateman was what he had done against Oklahoma when he was at Army. He's going to be just as hot this offseason because of what he did against Clemson from North Carolina.
Yes.
And so there's going to be – he's going to be sought after unless the wheels just totally fall off, which it doesn't look like they are, because it seems like he really knows what he's doing. And it's going to be interesting to see how Mack Brown is able to – keep this staff together, and the athletic department is able or not to keep this staff together, because I think that'll go a long way program wise because Jay Bateman's going places, not like he's leaving,
right?
But like he is ascending in the coaching world, probably going to be a head coach at some point, and clearly is one of the better defensive coordinators certainly that Carolina's had, and maybe nationally, because he's now done it against two different top five type teams. So, and it's not like either one of those places where he did it, he had an incredible amount of talent and he just lined them up and like, well, we're just as good as you. We're going to show you. He somehow figured out how to take, at this point in time, lesser talent and play them to an almost standstill. And that's what you want your coordinator to do. If you're not going to have equal players, how can he take the chalkboard and figure out how to make the game relatively even? That's what he did. So, of course you want him to do well the rest of this year, but from a program perspective, you really need some continuity there, if at all possible.
Carolina played with three linebackers more than it had. Mack Brown's talked a lot about how he doesn't feel like Carolina's gotten enough pressure on the quarterback. They feel like Dominique Ross is one of their best pass rushers, but it's also hard to keep Chas Surratt and Jeremiah Gimmel off the field right now, I think. And Surratt and Ross are the ones who play essentially the same position. And so Carolina played those three guys out there, was in nickel less, and then had to rely on some of them in pass coverage at times. And so – and Tar Heels a little banged up at safety right now. Cameron Kelly went down in the game, still being evaluated. Have to find out how long he is out, if he is out. Of course, we know Wolfick is out for several weeks. So, you know, what happens there with DJ Ford? Do you take him off a nickel, move him into a safety spot? Do you do something with DeAndre Hollins? So there's going to be some shuffling there. So how they continue to get the best personnel that is available on the field, I think, will be important. And Adam, and we're going to get to the fourth down and the two-point conversion here in a second, but Gimmel and Surratt were everywhere. And they're both younger players. I mean, Surratt's a junior, but younger to the position. Gimmel's a sophomore. Those guys were making plays all over the place. And they have speed. They know the game. They are two guys who it's exciting to watch them continue to grow at that linebacker spot.
It got to the point when Clemson had third down, your eyes went to Surratt to see what he was going to do, because you figured he was probably going to be involved in the play in some way. And what strides for someone who was playing quarterback last year at this time. Would encourage you again to go back and listen to his interview on the pod if you didn't, or if you missed it the first time around or thought, well, he won't be playing for long, because he had some really good things to say about why he made that move and why it was important to him. And Gimmel, Carolina lost him against Appalachian for that targeting call.
Yeah.
What if he could have stayed on the field? So, but he's a sophomore. Hopefully he learns. You don't have to deal with that again. But that's just another case of, if you could have had this same personnel, what might be different?
Surratt, 7 tackles, 2 for loss, had a sack, 2 passes broken up. Originally, he was credited with the forced fumble. They changed it to Gimmel. There were a bunch of players there. But he was in the mix on that play, too. They both had – I mean, that pass that Gimmel broke up on third down, where it happened on the Clemson sideline in the second half, I think it was third quarter, where he ran from the middle of the field all the way to the edge to knock it. I mean, that was impressive. I mean, physically, they are both very gifted.
And I thought the Surratt breakup early, maybe on Clemson's first or second drive, was a textbook example of what he had talked about with us, because he had a big one in the South Carolina game, and he talked about how the coaches had been on him about how to play that ball, and shows that he's coachable, because he did the same exact thing against Clemson. It might sound like a little thing that, oh, the coaches told me to do this, and then I went and did it. There's coaches everywhere banging their head against the wall of the locker room because they tell players to do something, and when they get out there in the game situation, they just don't do it because it's not natural to them. Surratt's figured out a way, even though maybe he's not a natural linebacker, to take what the coaches are telling him, incorporate it with his athleticism, and make plays that are important.
So, and Carolina, I mean, right from the beginning, Carolina kind of, on that first drive, it showed that it was there to play, not just on the long touchdown throw, but even on the first play of the game, it was just a handoff up the middle to Michael Carter. And remember how in the weight game we talked about somebody's moving forward and somebody's catching, and that doesn't mean that – it just means that one team is winning the energy battle, not that they aren't playing hard. It was clear that Carolina, energy-wise, was going to be there. And then – I think then, Adam, it was, okay, well, you expected Tar Heels to start hot, but then they kept making plays. That turnover I thought was huge, and to capitalize off the turnover was huge. Defense got confident, and that, I mean, the second half was almost a standstill between two defenses that were both just playing really well. So, fun game. Adam, that takes us to the fourth quarter. Mack Brown, and he's been very clear in saying it was his decision both times, went for it on 4th and 1 in around midfield. I think it was the 40 or the 45 of the Tigers. Carolina didn't get it. And that set up the touchdown drive for Clemson that ultimately was the game winner. And, of course, then the Tar Heels go for two at the end, which they don't get. I know this is going to sound like, of course Jones is going to say this. I think it's the right call. You go for it. And Mac Brown explained it again on Monday or furthered his explanation in that he felt like his defense, while in great shape, was that, you know, they had lost a couple guys to getting banged up. He knows how good the Clemson offense is. He felt like that on the fourth down that, hey, you should be able to get 1 yard. And Clemson just won the play, and Carolina gave it to Javonte Williams, who's the guy I think you would expect to give the ball to in that situation. He just didn't get it. And then on the two-point conversion, felt like their chances of winning one play for 2 or 3 yards or whatever it is to get the two-point conversion and take the lead, he liked those chances better than kicking it to tie it up, then also keeping Clemson from scoring again, which keep in mind, they still had a minute. Even if the two-point conversion is good, they still have a chance to win the game. Felt like it was better than that and then or overtime or whatever, just because Clemson is so talented. And then I'll get your thoughts on him after one more thing. He said something I thought was really interesting on Monday. He said, look, at this point in my career, he said, I don't care what people say. He said, those people don't have the information I have. It was my choice, my team. I knew what my offense looked like. I knew what my defense looked like. So I'm going to make that choice. What are they going to do, badmouth me? He said, I don't care. I'm not looking for another job. I've won enough games. He was like, I'm trying to win this game. I'm trying to do what's best for my team right now, not play it safe. And then if you end up losing in overtime, it's okay. Oh, you gave him a chance. He said, no, I'm playing to win right then. And so I think it was the combination of his mindset, the game where it was, the two teams relative to one another right now. I think it didn't work. I thought they were the right calls.
What Mac Brown has said has reminded me so much, as we know, bit of a Cubs fan. Cubs let the manager Joe Maddon go this weekend. And I thought Joe Maddon said something that almost all coaches at his level could say, which is he was talking to the media the last time he talked to him in Chicago, and he said, I always appreciate that y'all ask me questions. I always enjoy the back and forth with you and talking about it and explaining what I'm thinking, and you have the right to question what I'm thinking. But just know this. If I'm in one dugout and you're in the other dugout, my team's going to kick your butt because I know more than you.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. We all like to think, oh, we know just as much as they do, but really we don't. They know a million times more than we do. Of course Mac Brown has more information than we do and knows more about the state of his team than we do. Of course he does. Sometimes we like to pretend that's not the case. I don't see how you could possibly disagree with that. And he's earned the right for you to trust him. I don't think there's any question Carolina had a better chance of scoring on one play from 2 yards away than they did from preventing Clemson from going 40 or 50 yards to kick a field goal and or going into overtime and just trading drives. I mean, if I had told you a month ago, Jones, all Carolina's got to do to beat Clemson is just trade drives and get more points than them, you would have said, that's crazy. Carolina can't do that. But if I had said, you got one chance to make short yardage to beat them, okay. You take your chances with that. If you had known that play was going to go the way it did, you would have said, let's call a different play.
Well, and I do think Clemson played the play very well. I think Carolina felt like that play gave them multiple options of things to do. And so that is – if they have better personnel than you do, and Clemson does right now, that's not a shot at Carolina. It's just the fact. Then give yourself multiple chances on a play with different options to hope that you can get them on one of your options.
That one of their guys breaks down.
Right. And it just didn't. They played it exact as well as you could play it defensively. That's a team that's won 20 games in a row now. And so credit to them for doing it. But again, I don't think that makes the call wrong. And the play itself, could Carolina run a different play? Sure. I mean, yes. But if it worked, then everybody loves it. To me, it's more about the call than the play itself. And I think the call was right, even though it didn't work.
I felt like one thing that may have played into it was Carolina called a timeout before the two-point play, if I remember correctly. And Clemson talked about they the coaches told the players to watch for exactly that type of play because they had seen it on film.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could – and Carolina seemed very methodical with getting the plays
in. And yes, and that was a very – that was a calculated – that was a decision. And they talked about it earlier in the week. I mean, not out in public, but talked about it to – they felt like a couple different things. One, that that would eliminate any possibility of tipping their hand as to what the play call was. I'd never seen, though, Phil Longo, like, multiple times would walk out to the numbers and Sam Howell would actually come over and he'd just tell him what the play was. But I think part of that was to eliminate any possibility of tipping your hand. I think part of that was it gave the offensive line some time to get your act. Because when you're having to block what's coming with Clemson, I think they wanted to make sure you weren't just going fast just to go fast. That, hey, let's get it right rather than go quickly. So I think the Tar Heels were very purposefully deliberate in what they were doing for between plays. Yes.
We talked about this on the pod a couple of years ago. I think there was a really good story about the art of sign stealing in college football. Mm-hmm. I think it was in The Athletic, but I can't remember for sure. And just how prevalent it is, even though people don't think about it. And it, if you have some information that perhaps this other team is really good at it, it stands to reason you might take countermeasures to make sure that doesn't happen.
And you know what? Sorry to cut you off. Kudos for being flexible, too. Because I think there's some people who go, this is my offense.
Right.
If you can't do it the way I want to do it, yeah, we're going to go down doing what I want to do.
We're a lot smarter than them.
Right.
We'll just outsmart them.
And so I think it's not like Carolina was moving. And that's different from being true to your principles. Yeah, Carolina was true to its principles, but realized something that it needed to adjust to give itself a better chance. Sorry, I cut you off.
Well, I just think as far as the fourth quarter as a whole, going for it on fourth down a couple times, going for two, if you're a Carolina football fan, you are well aware Tar Heel football for many years has played somewhat defensively or responsively. The other team does something and then Carolina tries to react to it and do it better than them. This was Carolina football being offensive and trying to take control of the game. And at this point in the course of the program, it's not like Carolina's playing for the national title.
Right.
If you're playing for the national title, maybe you kick the one and you figure you've got the personnel to win it in overtime. That's not where the program is. Where the program is if you have a chance to take control of a game and try to make two or three plays that get you what I think we should probably discuss, whether we think that's the biggest win in program history, because I think it might have been, certainly in our era of the program history, then you do it. You take that opportunity because who knows when you're going to get that again. Certainly you don't get to play Clemson again. You're not going to get to play number one again this season. So at that point in the program, you take the chance at you're the team that decides the outcome. And if it doesn't succeed, all right, you learn something either way. And if it does, you're a genius. But I think it was the right call all quarter long to decide Carolina is the team that's going to decide this game, not Clemson.
Yeah.
And we're going to put them back on their heels.
And it was – I thought it became very clear on that final drive that ended in the touchdown, Carolina was going to go down with the ball in its hand. It wasn't going to play it safe and try to pin them back. It was going to – that was the drive. Either it was happening or it wasn't. The way they managed the clock, the way they managed their timeouts, the way they managed their play calling – they were going to go down with the ball in their hands as best they could. And Mack Brown even said he wished there had been less time on the clock when they scored. Clemson took a timeout, remember, right before the touchdown because they didn't have enough guys on the field. So I do think that if they could do it again, one thing they might do is try to burn some more clock because then if the plays is successful, then things are a little different for Clemson. Adam, one more thing. We were talking about recruiting earlier. I think, too, going for it shows recruits something, right? I mean, and maybe it's all just flowery post-game talk, but I think that when you do that, you're going, look, this is what we're doing. We're trying to win this game. You know, I mean, I do think that shows a little something in that regard, too.
Well, so much of recruiting is I'll make you a cool graphic and I'll send you a cool edit of you wearing some awesome Jordan cleats. That's cool. But what's cooler is saying we're going to go try to beat number one from 3 yards away, and you can come be part of that. That shows Johnny Recruit exactly what you've been telling him via text and Instagram and everything else. You went out and did exactly what you're trying to portray, and you don't get many opportunities to do that. That was one, and Carolina took it.
Adam, anything else?
The trajectory's got to continue.
Yes.
You got to build off of that. But as we sit here today on Tuesday, that felt like an important moment, an important afternoon for Carolina football.
Absolutely. Absolutely felt like an important step. Important step forward for the Tar Heels. Now you got to build off of it. Okay, Adam, even though it seems like a long time ago, late night was on Friday night. It's hard to take a lot away from the basketball side of things. It's a scrimmage, 20 minutes running clock. Tar Heels, as we have discussed, are battling some injury issues right now that I think will be important to get those rectified as they move through the year. Carolina is very, and it's hard to say this when you have two graduate transfers, but just it's a young group, young together. I think it is a team that has some potential, but there are some big question marks on this team that have to get figured out, and fortunately the Tar Heels have somebody really good to figure it out in Roy Williams.
And you're not going to answer any of those questions at late night with Roy Williams.
No.
That's not what it's for.
Right.
I think we've all sort of seen the evolution of that night, and we've all been a little perplexed as to what exactly is that for. And so is this the blue-white game? Like 2005, 6, 7 in there? Are we going to get to see some more basketball? It's 2019. We all need to realize that's not what that night is. That night exists for the 30 seconds when Roy Williams did the electric slide wearing a pink blazer and cool shoes.
Yep.
That is what it is for, to get that on camera in front of people.
I mean, between Mack Brown dancing in the locker room after South Carolina and Roy Williams on the court, I'm not sure the Tar Heels have had more social media exposure than those two things in years.
And social media exposure to the people that matter.
Yes.
For stuff like that,
yes.
Which is recruits.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to get. There was a time period at some point where other programs were trying to portray Carolina as, well, they don't get it, or they're old, or they're out of touch. You can't be out of touch when you're wearing a pink blazer doing the electric slide on Instagram.
Yeah.
You just can't be. Those two things don't go together.
Something we've all learned.
Yeah. That's something I've learned in 2019. And Carolina has figured out a way to get back into that conversation. And it appears, Jones, that it may be working.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it does, Adam. Let's go back. Hold on. Let's go back to our breaking recruiting analysis for Tar Heel basketball. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Good on you, sir.
I'll tell you one other thing about late night.
Okay.
I thought Ashlyn Harris was really good at hosting the event.
Yes.
And her interaction with Anson Dorrance, which Coach Williams organized more or less.
Very genuine.
It really was good.
Yes.
When she walked up to him, I think there was this feeling in the room of what's about to happen. And what was about to happen was she was about to pour her heart out to this Hall of Fame coach and say these words that were absolutely perfect. And authentic.
I think Anson Dorrance may be like, hey, guys, can I get a copy of that video, maybe?
but she was really good. We would like to have her on the pod at some point. Didn't get a chance past weekend because she wasn't in town long enough.
We tried.
She came into town very close to the start of late night and then left very close to the end of late night.
Yes.
So we were not able to have her on. But we're going to extend an official invitation
right now
to Ashlyn Harris, who is a big pod listener.
I'm sure.
We'd like to have you on so that we could possibly be as cool as you.
Adam, Cole Anthony appears to be very, very good at basketball. This is something I've learned in watching that 20-minute scrimmage. Chris, I don't even know this. I think Christian Keeling may have led the scoring. I don't even know. Carolina has some pieces. I still think there are big questions about the depth for the Tar Heels right now. You know, after you get past the front line of your front court, what you do there, do you have to go small? How does it – and some of that's the health. You know, how available is Sterling Manley going to be? He didn't play during the scrimmage. Brandon Robinson appeared to get shaken up at one point during the scrimmage. So there's still just a lot of questions.
Carolina's most talented player is Cole Anthony.
Yes.
And it's going to be Cole Anthony from now until April, it looks like. How can they figure out a way to incorporate him with the others, and how do they play together? That's something you can't know on October 1st, and you won't know until January, February, March. But he certainly appears to have the skills to make everyone else better. And he's an interesting guy from a leadership perspective, because there was some talk that maybe sometimes it was too much before he got here. You really haven't seen that at all since he's been here. He's been the exact guy you want him to be. He's been the guy who's been a vocal leader. He's been the guy encouraging his teammates. And that this team's going to need that, because there are going to be some nights when it doesn't go perfectly.
He did not care for that call at the end of the scrimmage where Kenny Williams said he stepped out of bounds. But Kenny, former pod guest, Kenny, you got it right.
Kenny Williams,
you, sir,
right.
Were on it.
Yep.
That was two pod guests on the officials.
Yeah.
Quentin Thomas and Kenny Williams.
I think they went through old pods. And who would make a good official?
Is Ben Jones available? Adam, you've been to some practices early on. Any nuggets that you can pass along?
Well, I think Coach Williams has talked about the main nugget, which is it would be nice to have the whole roster out there at some point so you can see what's actually there. I think there's a chance Anthony Harris could be important, but you need him to get out on the court in order to figure that out. Of course, it's not like he's dogging it or something. He tore his ACL in December, I think, so that's 9 months ago. If this was 2000, we'd be saying, well, he's not going to play at all this year.
Right.
So it's not like he's loafing or not doing something right. You just would like to have him out there. I think it's a reminder that, as you said earlier, this is an inexperienced team that has to start a little closer to the beginning than the last couple teams have, because they don't know how to do things. And Roy Williams has been very hands-on the first couple practices with some things that maybe would just be assumed in the past that his teams would know, to the point of showing Cole Anthony, the way he describes it is, if the boards on the floor are running sideways instead of long ways and they're numbered, you're standing on board 33, I need you on board 41. And just little things like that about where to be or how to play a screen on the ball. And just things like that have to get taken care of early so that you can do the more advanced stuff later. It's always interesting to me when Roy Williams talks about screens on the ball, because I think they really make him mad. And he even said one day at practice, other teams are going to set a million of these. We're not going to do that because I don't like to, but we're going to have to know how to defend them. So he doesn't necessarily like it, but he realizes he's got to figure out a way to stop it. And the Tar Heels are working on that, and they will, of course, see a million of them.
It is worth reminding everyone, Adam, right now on October 1st, this is a long season. Roy Williams plays the long game. He is playing to get the individuals and thereby the team better as the year goes along. So what you see in November, what you see in December, hopefully builds you to what you want to see in February and in March. Just worth reminding everyone of that.
And what you even see on the court in November and December may be different than what you see in February and March. And no greater example of that than Coby White, who was at Late Night, which he got a great reception.
Yeah.
People love Coby White.
Yes.
I think because he was really good on the pod.
Wow. Understandable.
He got a great reception, but there were some times early on where he looked confused. By the end of the year, dude scoring 30. So there will be progress. The vast history of Roy Williams at Carolina tells us that, just as it tells us things may not go perfectly in November and December.
Adam, I forgot, so silly of me, that we needed to name a champion of the gridiron, where we highlight some MVPs from the previous game. Brought to you by UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds to help keep you in the game at your very best. You can see their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. You know, we mentioned Surratt and Gimel, and I think they would easily fall into this category. But since we've already talked about them, I'll mention Michael Carter. He, for a second, would have finished the game with more than 100 yards, but then had a negative yards play, finished with 99. Michael Carter has always been good in space. I thought he was physical, too. And he's never not been physical. I think when you think about Michael Carter, you think of, oh, a little scat back who's out there and gets a swing pass and can make a big gain. And he is that, but it's not that he isn't the other thing. He can be an every down, at least at the college level, he can be an every down back, and I think he showed that on Saturday. I thought he ran really hard and really well. I thought it was interesting, again, how the Heels, the evolution of how they're using those backs. It was, you know, Michael Carter did a lot of the work, and then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, it was Javonte Williams for the most part because he was fresher. He's a powerful runner, and so you're hoping maybe Clemson is a little worn down just because it's the end of the game. And so just interesting to watch that situation evolve.
When you talked during the game about him being over 100 yards, I thought this is a Chad Scott against Miami situation.
Yeah.
He's going to have a 100-yard game against this really good opponent, and we're going to remember this. And then he ended up at 99, which was disappointing for me personally.
Yeah.
We already talked about this guy, but I think he also was a champion of the game, Charlie Heck.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, he went out there, and Mac Brown brought up a good point when talking about Charlie on Monday. He said, look, Charlie Heck's going to get drafted. He said it would have been easy for Charlie Heck to go, you know what, I'm not going to – no need for me to go put film out there with me with one hand. That's not in my best interest. But instead he went out there and played really well, and I think it helps him individually just as much as it helps the Tar Heel team that he is so selfless. Maybe he could be your LS Tractor hero, Adam. But just – and we've had Charlie on the podcast, just a – first-class guy, wanted to do something for the team, even though he won 100%, and he played well, and it helped. Okay, we've gone a long time before we've gotten to our interview. Let's get to our conversation with the chancellor here at Carolina, Kevin Guskowitz. We'll do that, come back, and a little bit more to do. Adam?
Sure.
We have a list, so we'll do that and more when we return. But first, our conversation with the interim chancellor. But we really just consider him the chancellor. Kevin Guskowitz.
Man, we are excited today to have Interim Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz with us, and we think he's here to do an interview, not to beat up Jones for misrepresenting some family ties, but we want to get to the bottom of that.
This is a stressful interview for
enjoy
me.
These last 30 minutes, Jones. It's been a good run.
Pam sends her best.
Chancellor, thanks again for giving us some time this morning. I guess, first of all, what have these last few 6 or 7 or so months been like for you?
It's been great, Adam. It's a place I love. I've been here 24 years, as you know. But just when you think you know a place inside and out, I learn something new every day. I've been out on about a 24-stop listening and learning tour and getting out to all the schools and divisions across the university. And as you know, it's a world-class university, and I'm just I feel very privileged to be leading it right now.
What are some things that you maybe thought you knew that you realized you didn't know, or something new that you learned as you've gone through this experience so far?
So I've, especially over in professional schools and just looking at the way in which we've sort of re-engineered a lot of the curriculum across the professional schools, especially in the health affairs, integrated medicine has become something that differentiates us here at Carolina. So the nursing school is requiring students to take classes in pharmacy and in public health, and the dentistry is taking, you know, their students are taking courses in the School of Medicine and public health and across the other schools. And I think that is differentiating us as we're re-engineering the curriculum across those schools. So that's been one of the things that's maybe, I don't know what surprised me, but I'm just pleased that we're leading in that way.
When you go into that office in South Building in February for the first time and you sit down and you go, okay, now what do I do? What did you do? That first day, what did you think, and what was on your list?
Well, as I told President Roper when he asked me to take the job, is that I wouldn't function as an interim chancellor. In other words, I was going to function as the chancellor if you wanted me to take this on, and we had a lot of momentum going already, and right in the middle of a capital campaign. Some challenges in front of us, but I've always said with every challenge there are 2 or 3 opportunities on the other side of it. We have an amazing leadership team, and I wanted to just let them do their job, and really encouraging our faculty to stay focused on the mission of the university and what it is that we were asking them to do, and I think we've been able to do that.
I think some people forget sometimes that University of North Carolina isn't just Chapel Hill. There's just so much else going on around the state that Carolina has a big part of. What is it? Are you going on a bus tour soon? Am I right about that? And if so, what is that?
Yeah, thanks, Jones. We've got a 90 faculty members going to jump on a bus. We've been joking about it, saying we're jumping on the bus with Gus. And we are going to hit probably half the counties across the state of North Carolina over about 3 days, October 16th through the 18th. And it's to showcase the amazing work of our faculty and graduate students and the work that we're doing across the state, the impact that we have. We pride ourselves on being not only the first of the public universities, but also the most public of the public. I tell people we're passionately public, but it's also about getting faculty out to better understand what happens in these small towns across North Carolina that our students call home, so that they can come back and better understand how they can have an even greater impact as we build out our curriculum and think about the next series of research studies that they'd like to conduct.
Are you excited about being on a bus for three straight days? I know, well, the other stuff is exciting for you, but how about the actual bus part?
Well, the interesting thing, Jones, will be that the faculty, there'll be 30 on each bus. There's a bus heading west, one heading south, and one heading east, and we're going to all converge back in Chapel Hill, Quail Hill, the Chancellor's residence, on Friday evening, the 18th. I have to try to find a way to get on all three of those buses. So I might have to rent a helicopter. I'm not sure how I'm going to do it, but they're working out a plan for me.
Multiple forms of transportation from bus to bus.
Absolutely.
I like it.
You mentioned not functioning as an interim chancellor. How do you balance on a day-to-day basis? Okay, here you're making dozens of decisions every single day. How do you balance this is what's best for the university and this is what might be best for Kevin, who would like this job permanently? Is that tough?
It's a great question. I tell you, what I have told, in fact, I was meeting with a group of faculty leaders recently, and they asked about the interim tag and the fact that we also have two or three other vice chancellors that are in interim roles. And I said, don't worry about the interim tag. In many ways, aren't we all interim? We've been around for nearly 226 years, and I certainly hope we'll be around for at least another 226. And so we're all stewards of this amazing place for a relatively short period of time. And so as I think about this role, I have to think about both the certainly the long term, making decisions that are going to make sure that we remain a leading global public research university. We're proud of our rankings. You probably saw some of the recent rankings. And so decisions that we are making as a leadership team are to make sure that we stay on that trajectory, but also thinking about the short term. And when I say that, I'm not just talking about Kevin Guskowitz and my, I've made it clear that I'd love to stay in this role and become the permanent chancellor, but that's a decision that the search committee and President Roper and the Board of Governors has to make. And I'm making decisions that are going to help our university. That's my goal right now. And if it works out that I'm asked to lead permanently, I'm going to be thrilled about it.
Is that stressful for you that there is this search going on while you are trying to lead?
I'll be honest with you. I know that process is happening, but all I can do is take care of what's in front of me and what my job is and the priorities that I've laid out. And back in July, I laid out what our priorities would be for the next 9 to 12 months, and that's where I'm focused. And that's rebuilding and strengthening the partnership with the state of North Carolina, our citizenry, with the Board of Governors, the legislature, and getting some of them to campus, the bus tour. We're getting out and showcasing our great work. We're launching new programs is the second area that I'm really focusing on, launching new programs that I like to say are uniquely Carolina, doing it our way, but what differentiates us. And then the third area is something called operational excellence, and it's just trying to help us become a little more efficient and nimble in the way that we accomplish our goals, and everything from renovations to buildings to new programs, getting, you know, hiring of faculty and staff and reducing the time it takes to do that.
You have four kids, I think, who are roughly in the college age band. They're not all in college, but they're in that band. What insight do you think that gives you into these thousands of students who you're thinking about every single day, that at the end of the day, you've got to go home and be dad?
So I love the fact that I've had a chance to view this university through different lenses, everything from a junior faculty member just trying to get tenured up through the becoming a department chair, a dean, a center director, and now interim chancellor, but also have had the opportunity to view it through the lens of a parent of two students here, and that's a beautiful view as well. And it's they don't like to talk much about school when they don't come home often, but I do. We still have I have one that just graduated from college, two here at Carolina now, and a 12-year-old in middle school, and so family time is important. But these are long days in this job. But Amy and I knew what we signed up for, and we do our best to keep everything in balance.
I think a lot of people may know you as that concussion guy. I know he did that stuff with the concussions. What exactly did you do with concussions, and how was that something that was interesting to you, and how'd you get started with all of that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll try to keep this short, but, Mac Brown had a big part to do with that. I got here in 95 as a junior faculty member. I needed to be in a place where I could carry out my concussion research. Back in 95, there were very few places willing to take that on, and very few coaches across the country that would have allowed their athletes to participate in these sort of research studies where we needed to conduct baseline testing to try to identify what tools needed to go in that concussion toolbox. Coach Brown at the time, as you know, he was here in 95, was one of those, perhaps the only football coach in the country that would have done that at that time. And he said, hey, if it's going to help make us better, keep our players safe on the playing field, and help Carolina become a leader in this area, then let's go for it. And because he did that, a lot of the other coaches jumped on board. And so that's really what started it. Because of that early work, we really helped build the baseline concussion testing program for the NCAA and for the NFL, and it's now become standard of care across the country, and I'm proud of that. It's one of those areas, as I said, that what are the programs that differentiate us, and I was proud to be here at that time whenever we built that out. And so it's neat to have Coach back and seeing the benefit of that early yes that he said back in 95.
When you look at the landscape of where we are, especially college sports-wise, with concussions and knowledge and awareness and where we might be able to go, where do you think we are relative to where you hoped we might be, and what else could there be?
Well, the thing I tell people, Adam, is that there is not a concussion crisis, even though you see the incidence appears to be on the rise. But really what that is a result of better education. So everywhere from high school to college to our pro athletes, they now know today, 15, 20 years later, after a lot of that work started, what a concussion is, what the signs and symptoms are. So they're being pulled from the game. They're being withheld for longer periods of time, which is a better care for them, which is reducing the risk of repeat concussions, because once you've had one concussion, you're more susceptible to a second. So I'm proud of that work, and the media has helped to educate about those signs and symptoms, helping to educate players, coaches, parents about concussion. But I honestly don't believe there are actually more concussions sustained today on our playing fields than there was 20 years ago. We're just reducing the number that went undiagnosed before. So that's a real positive, and because of a lot of the work done here, we've put better tools in the toolbox for athletic trainers and team physicians to be able to use, everything from the cognitive test to balance test and ways to assess the symptoms and then to track their recovery and putting them back more safely. And so proud of that work. And then, as you know, we also have the Center for the Study of Retired Athletes here, and mm-hmm. so we study the other end of the spectrum, how these retired players can function in later life.
So from a junior faculty member all the way up to interim chair, not many people take all these steps along the way at the same place to get from one spot to the other spot. How do you think you were able to do it?
Well, everything I do, I sort of use what I call as a hypothesis-driven approach. It's the same way that we started answering some of the important concussion research questions, where I'm putting a hypothesis out there based on some amount of information, where we're trying to advance our understanding of that. And in leading as a dean and now as interim chancellor, I'm sort of functioning the same way, and that is we've got a problem, and let's we hypothesize something about that, and let's put the appropriate methods in place to study that and make sure that we have a good outcome and learn from it. And that's really what we're doing. And I'm proud of the work that we're doing. And as I tell people, you're not going to have agreement across the board on every decision that we're making.
Sure.
But if we're being, you know, making informed decisions based on that they're data driven, hypothesis driven, then I think we're going to end up in the right place. And to your question, I'll tell you, I don't think there's probably another chancellor in the country that can tape an ankle like this one.
You will challenge anyone right now.
I was. That's absolutely.
And I think that kind of that may go some to what I wanted to ask you, because in the last couple of weeks, we've heard Coach Brown and Coach Dorrance both say, well, I don't know if I'm supposed to say this, but I really want Kevin Guskowitz to be the next chancellor. I don't think there's many scientists who they feel that way about. How have you been able to connect with athletics while not prioritizing athletics over everything else?
Yeah, it's trust building. And I think that they see the value in, again, going back to the types of the research questions that that I've been interested in as a concussion researcher, but also just in my home department of exercise and sports science, where there's a lot of outstanding world-class research that's being conducted looking at injury prevention and the importance of exercise. I mean, our motto for that department for a number of years has been exercise is medicine, and there's research to back that up. And so I think we're a world-class university when it comes to research, our curriculum, and we pride ourselves on excellence in athletics. And I love the way in which there's been an intersection of those areas here, unlike I think any other place in the country. And so I think it's building trust with those coaches, and they see the value that we bring. And I love the relationship with that I have with the coaches and our faculty. I tell people that I brag every day about our world-class faculty at Carolina, but in many ways our coaches, they are doing much the same that our faculty are, and they're teaching, they're inspiring, they're serving as lifelong mentors to these student athletes, and that's what we expect of our faculty as well.
What are some of the challenges right now, in your opinion, the biggest challenges facing Carolina that maybe everyone isn't aware of, that isn't right in their face right now?
I think budget. And I've been asked over and over, you know, what do you lose sleep over? And it's really the finances. And we have to continue, you know, we get $520 million of base funding from the state of North Carolina. So I continue to remind people that the state of North Carolina is the biggest donor to UNC Chapel Hill. And we need mm-hmm. to make certain that the legislature and the citizens of North Carolina know that their tax dollars are well spent, that there's a great return on that investment. Having said that, we are a much bigger enterprise than we were even just 5 or 6 years ago. And so that base funding, which has sort of remained stable, we need more funding. We need to get creative around the ways we're going to be able to convince the Board of Governors and legislature around tuition and the way that tuition dollars are used to help advance our mission. And if we're going to grow enrollment, which we've been trying to do, the only way that we can really do that is going to be with increased appropriation and or tuition dollars to allow us to hire more faculty. We have a lot of deferred maintenance on our campus. When you're 226 years old, we have some really old buildings, and granted many of them have been restored, but there are many others that are in desperate need of repair and renovation. So it's really around resources, and if we can pull that together, it's going to stay on this trajectory.
When we were on the way down here, you stopped and had a conversation with Billy, who works here in the Smith Center, and you mentioned you've gone out and listened to a lot of people. I'm sure you go to a lot of meetings where you're sitting around a table deciding things. What's the balance between those kinds of decisions and also getting out and listening and talking to the people who are doing it and incorporating their information as well?
Now, you know, I talk about world-class faculty, students, but our staff are amazing. And so I always stop and thank whoever it is for whatever role they play. It's an important role. And I think that this is a community. And part of, we're about to roll out our new strategic plan. It's going to be called, I'm not going to say it's going to be, it is called Carolina Next, Innovations for Public Good. And if you know anything about the strategic framework that we rolled out two or three years ago, there were two central pillars. One is of the public, for the public. The second is innovation made fundamental. Mm. And so this is a blending, this title of our new plan, of those two central pillars. And the first of the 8 strategic initiatives in that plan that you'll be hearing more about is called Building Community Together. And I think it's really important that we recognize that everybody here at Carolina plays an important role in that, whether you're working over here at the Smith Center, or a housekeeper over in Hojo, or one of the cafeteria workers over at Lenore. Everybody plays an important role, and that building community together means listening to the needs of everyone, because people are passionate about this place, regardless of what role they play. So that's as important, and that oftentimes informs, Adam, the decisions that you mentioned when we're sitting at the table deciding on a direction to go.
I think one thing Carolina has always prided itself on is diversity, is inclusion. How do you try to foster that feeling on campus and make sure that's still something that is a strength of UNC?
We're proud of that, and I'll tell you that because we place diversity so high as a priority, it's what allows everything else to thrive. The curriculum comes to life. We have a new general education curriculum in the College of Arts and Sciences, what every undergrad student is required to take for the most part in their first 2 years. And that content is outstanding, but what brings it to life are the discussions that take place when you have a classroom that's made up of every walk of life, just a diverse group of students that come from different backgrounds and have different perspectives. And I think that's another thing that differentiates Carolina. We're working really hard to make sure we have a diverse faculty, and I'm proud of the fact that over the past 5-6 years, if you look at the types of hires we've made, we strive to be a global university. So every student can't study abroad, so we have to bring global to Carolina. So that means going out and hiring faculty that come from different backgrounds, and that means that from different parts of the world. So that's a big part of our mission right now.
You mentioned study abroad. I know that was something important to you also with the College of Arts and Sciences. How do you try to bring those types of individual student experiences to a large group like the student body?
I emphasize the importance of understanding this ever-changing global economy that we live in. So with my own kids, I've had two rules for them when they've gone off to college. The first is that they would room their first year with somebody they've never met before, because I think that's important to get to, you learn from that experience. And the second is that they'd study abroad. And they love that second rule that I had.
That one's much cooler than the first.
The first one they pushed back pretty hard on, but thanked me later for it. And so I think it's important to get out and see the world, and regardless of where you go, you're going to learn something, you're going to bring it back to Chapel Hill after you've studied abroad. But as I said, I've said that my goal would be that someday we can say that over half of our undergraduate students here have studied abroad, and we're getting close. In fact, I just learned yesterday, and you're the first to hear it, but we went over 40% for this year.
Wow.
And 8-9 years ago, we were sitting at about 23%. And so I had some people tell me, you'll never get to 51%. I said, watch me. We will. And so we're out raising a lot of money because, as you know, we have a lot of kids that come from different backgrounds, socioeconomically challenged families, where studying abroad can be expensive. I want to be sure that every student at Carolina can study abroad. So we have to go out and raise some private funding to make sure that that can happen.
Just like in athletics, I would assume, in the academic side of things, you guys are competitive, and you want to be the first one to do this or the best one to do this. What are the places that you consider your peers, your competitors, but also how do you try to work together, because you're all ultimately working for the same thing?
Sure. So we have 15 peer institutions that it's defined by our Board of Governors. Within consultation with us, and so we're often looking at what those institutions are doing. We know that they're also looking at us and watching what we're doing. And I tell people that I'm big into benchmarking, so I do like to see where we rank within those peers institutions on certain metrics. I'm proud of the fact that if you look at the diversity metric, that we do better than nearly all of them. We are creating programs that I know we're proud of, that, as I mentioned earlier, are uniquely Carolina. So mm-hmm. We're taking on some of the big challenges of our time. We have an Institute of Politics that is a student-led program that was started about 2 years ago that's unique to any of our peer institutions. Our entrepreneurship program sits in the College of Arts and Sciences, unlike any other entrepreneurship program in the country. It was just ranked fourth by U.S. News and World Report. We are, our pharmacy, public health, School of Information Library Sciences, these are three schools that are ranked very high among our peers, either first or second, and the other schools are on the move. And so we're looking at that closely, and proud of the work that we're doing. We're ahead of, I think, nearly all of those publics that are among our peer groups on that study abroad metric, with the exception of maybe one.
If you need Adam and me, we can go be the muscle and go rough some people up if you need us to go over there and just let them know what's up.
I got you on speed dial.
We'll bring them down to the studio and they'll never be seen again. Nobody will ever find them. What is something fun about being chancellor, especially something that maybe you couldn't have anticipated and then one day you thought, I really enjoyed this?
I think it's just, you know, like I said, I've been here 24 years, but the passion that people have for this place, and one of you mentioned it earlier, and that is that this, you know, this is our, you know, flagship institution that we're proud of, and people they want to be an ambassador for the University of North Carolina, whether they graduated in 1980 or 1962, or whether they had a son or daughter that graduated from here and they never grad, you know, they don't even have a college degree. They want this to be a place that they can call home. The fact that I was out there during the last week of the semester, and we did the bell tower climb with the seniors, and they were emotional. Those seniors, about this being the last week of their college career, and I out there talking to them and saying, "Listen, we are here for you. We've been here for 225 years." At that point, I said, "We're going to continue to be here for you. You can always call Carolina home." So I think it's just that passion that so many people have for this place. That is fun to get out across the state to get to travel. I was just out in Seattle last week, meeting with alums who are up in executive positions at Microsoft and Amazon, and hearing about the, you know, what their Carolina degree has meant to their career. And when you're just focused on your own work, your own research and teaching, you don't get to hear these amazing stories of what Carolina has meant to others. So that's been special in this role as chancellor.
That answer may be right on the path where this question is going as well, but you've mentioned uniquely Carolina and some of the new programs that are uniquely Carolina. What in your mind makes Carolina unique? What makes Carolina different than some of those peer institutions or some other places around the country?
I think it goes back to our public mission. And as I've said, of the public for the public, innovation made fundamental. You bridge those two, Carolina Next, innovations for public good. If you look at the research, and we're going to be out across the state of North Carolina, as I talked about earlier, showcasing some of that work, but it's the rare exception that you hear about one of our faculty members' research that doesn't impact humankind in one way or another. Whether that's work that's being done out of our Department of Sociology, our School of Public Health, or the law school, it's all about improving humankind, and we're passionate about that. And I think that carries through with our alums. I'm sorry, most of what they go on to do will in some way come back and help to improve humankind. And then one more thing I'll mention, Jones, is I'm proud of the fact that we lead the nation in the number of graduates with double degrees or a degree and a minor. And I think that, 2 weeks ago with a group of students, two of them were double majors in music and physics with a minor in entrepreneurship. There's not another place in the country where you can do that, and I'm telling you, that sets them apart. It allows them to graduate, go on maybe to graduate school or to take a job with a company, and maybe 10 years from now pivot, because they've got the breadth across a great liberal arts degree, the depth within a discipline or two, and then we add the practice piece, because we're so focused, Adam, as you mentioned earlier, on experiential education. And whether that's an undergrad research experience, an internship, or that study abroad experience, they are equipped to be able to pivot later in life to find a new passion. And that sets us apart.
Go ahead, Adam.
On the athletic side, there are so many very talented coaches in this athletic department. What have you learned or observed during your long time at Carolina from some of these coaches that you feel like might help you from a leadership perspective?
Well, what you may not know is that my first year here in 95, Jenny Slingluff at that time, now Jenny Levy, was coming to Carolina at the same time. We had both been at UVA. I think she had one stop right after UVA for a year, maybe at Georgetown, but I want to still be clinically active. I had been an athletic trainer. I'd worked for the Pittsburgh Steelers and then went to UVA for my PhD, worked clinically there while I was working on my dissertation, and I still wanted to be clinically active here because I felt to be in the classroom teaching injury rehabilitation and therapeutic modalities that you needed to still be clinically active. So they said, perfect, we're starting a women's lacrosse program. We'll pair you and Jenny up, work together. Jenny took a team, a club team, that first year, and at least two of those first 3 years, she took the women's lacrosse team to the Final Four. Now, she'll be the first to tell you it wasn't as competitive at that time relative to what it is now, but what I learned from Jenny was that anything's possible, and I've said we need to be strategic, bold, and student-focused. That's sort of been my my motto that I've used as dean of the college and now as interim chancellor, and you know, Jenny was strategic about the way she put a team together and the game plan and all that. She was bold in saying we can win in our first year. And it was always about the students. I always end with student focus. So I've used, Jenny and I really enjoyed. I had to jump out of that role after about 4 years because my research was taken off. I didn't have time to still do the clinical work. But that's just one example. And then you take somebody like Coach Williams and what he means to, he just bleeds Carolina blue. Everything is about Carolina. It's about the great university. I mean, certainly he's coaching the basketball team, but if you look at all that he does for this university as a whole, I think that says a lot, and I have to think you can't just silo yourself off and be focused on one area. And then Anson, I asked Anson Dorrance to give the keynote talk at this year's convocation to our new students. And I don't know if you had a chance to hear his speech, but it was spectacular. I mean, he talked very little about coaching women's soccer. It was about his time as a student here and what he would have done differently and the importance of students getting out and appreciating freedom of speech and getting out and listening to people that they might not agree with, but to learn from that and what a great public university is about. And he, nobody gets a better pregame pep talk than Anson Dorrance. And so I thought that was the right person for that talk. So I've learned a lot, as I think our campus community has, from our coaches.
Kevin, last thing, at least from me, because I know you do have another appointment here this morning. What do you think the role of athletics is within a university? What role can athletics play for Carolina?
Well, as I've said earlier, I think that better than any place I'm aware of, we have this blended approach. We talk about excellence in academics, meaning our curriculum, excellence in research, solving the grand challenges of our time, and excellence in athletics. And I think that the melding of those three is unique, and our coaches, as I've already said, are they inspire our student athletes. They serve as lifelong mentors, just as our faculty and staff and graduate students do. And so I'm proud of the fact, and it brings a community together. You don't have to be the biggest basketball fan or soccer fan or lacrosse fan, but just to get out and see the energy on campus on any given Saturday afternoon. I loved this past spring. Amy and I spent an entire day just hopping from one event to another, and that included ending the day at Playmakers Theater after we had been to two lacrosse games, a baseball game, and a talk on campus in the middle of the day. And that's what I call a great day.
We thank Chancellor Guskowitz for his time. Hope you enjoyed it. It is brought to you by the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Did you know that texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds? And at highway speeds, that's like driving the length of an entire football field with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. No need to text and drive. Go to trustedchoice.com/goheels. Find an independent insurance agent near you to learn more. I actually had an in-depth conversation about the five-second length of time, Adam, with my kids. We were driving somewhere on Sunday. Somebody was going all slow and swervy in front of me. We go to the side, and this young lady who was driving was on her cell phone. And I said, kids, this right here is why you don't text while driving.
That's right.
And then you know what I said, Adam? Literally, I said, did you know that you take your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds? Young angel children, that is like driving. You can get a whole football field in 5 seconds.
Had they ever heard that before?
I don't know, but they did then. Live version of the pod right there in the car.
A live pod. I've been wanting to do that. Did you get a good reception to the live pod?
Dad, can we pull over and get something to eat?
Is that a Dairy Queen?
Can you get me some candy? Pod is also brought to you by Pinehurst and the Pinehurst Brewing Company, located in the historic steam plant building in the village of Pinehurst. If you're looking for great golf and great beer, Adam, shout it from the mountaintops. You can visit Pinehurst and see what's on tap. We will now tap into Adam's list.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
This list hits all corners of the world.
Oh.
Everyone gather around your radio and the fireside because there's something for you in this list. I want to start with former pod guest Melvin Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Saw him at late night on Friday night, and he was with his son, whose name is Melvin Jr.
Yeah.
And because I'm an old crotchety guy, I was like, oh, little Melvin Jr., did your daddy ever tell you what a great shooter he was for the Tar Heels? And Melvin Jr., I thought this was perfect. Melvin Scott Jr. Like, if I had to guess what his son was like, I would have said this.
Yep.
Melvin Jr., like, shook my hand, looked right at me. He goes, yeah, and I'm better than him.
Nice. Perfect.
Good on you, Melvin Jr. I like that. So look for Melvin Jr. in about 10 years, shooting the eyes out for the Tar Heels.
Dropping it through the net.
Yeah. I wanted to remind people, we don't always talk about the tickets we have to give away on the pod. You need to follow the pod on Twitter and Instagram because you might get a chance, like Christopher Jacques did on Friday, to go to the Clemson game.
So sneaky.
We just decided on Friday afternoon.
It was like a ninja ticket giveaway.
Yeah. Right, let's get a couple pod listeners in the door at the Clemson game. We only did it on Twitter. We didn't talk about it on the pod. You need to follow those two things or you'll miss out. Also on Friday, what up to Terrell Joy?
Yeah.
Came down to the fast break against Cancer Breakfast and went to late night as well. Big pod listener, took an arms cross picture, had a lot of fun.
Adam, worth mentioning, unclineburger.org/fastbreak.
Yep.
You can bid on the pod experience until October 9th, where the winning bidder is going to get to come to the new Pod World headquarters, we hope. Sometime during the year, and we are going to – we'll show around the new full media and communications building. We'll do an interview with the winning bidder, talk about their fandom, how they became a Tar Heel. So that will – and then that person will be a guest on the pod. And the bidding, it's hot.
It's hot.
And heated.
It says hot right on the bidding.
It said hot. So it's getting up there. It's at $1,500 right now as I'm looking at it. And remember, all that money goes right to the UNC Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center. It's a wonderful cause. We were reminded of that again on Friday during Coach Williams' breakfast. Chad Holbrook, just an excellent speech. I thought it was one of the best ones, Adam, I'd heard since I'd been involved with the event. And actually, I had several people come up to me and say they thought this was the best fast break against cancer that they had been to. And not – I don't say that because I was involved. I say that because Chad was so great. We raised good money. It was just a good feeling morning. And so your bid can go right to help out the Comprehensive Cancer Center here at UNC.
The value placed on the pod experience
little high.
Was somewhat exorbitant, and I thought it might scare off bidders. They put the value of $1, $1, Bob, on the pod experience, and I thought, well, if we can hit the value, that'll be good.
Normally, we have to pay people the dollars.
Right.
We couldn't put negative on there.
But now we're feeling some pressure now that bidding has gone up, so we're trying to think of some ways we can make the winner feel special, maybe a little little pod gift bag, perhaps, for the winner of that experience.
We have a potty sitting around that we're never going to give to Bill Walton. Just give that away, Steve.
Daddy, why does this trophy say Bill Walton? I don't know. That's what they call me on the pod.
Thank you for my life.
Thanks, Big Grits, for your kindness, for your generosity, for your patience, and for my life. I love Big Grits.
UNCLineburger.org/fastbreak. Just that website one more time. And there are a lot of cool auction items on there, too. So there's a lot of great things on there at varying levels of cost, and all the money goes to the Comprehensive Cancer Center. So check it out.
I have some breaking news on the proper way to pronounce the name of the mascot of the University of North Carolina.
Oh, okay. This was a discussion from last week.
Yes. And we also talked to a future guest, like future Jones and Adam talked to a future guest person about this same topic.
Oh.
But this is...
I can't even put all those things together.
This is different confirmation. Our oldest daughter spoke to the Ram himself.
Oh. Not the live ram. He was too busy going, where's my grass?
She asked him, but all he said was, I assume this is the mascot ram. Now, I think what you're about to find out and understand is this person doesn't know what the heck they're talking about. According to this person, it's pronounced Ramses.
Yeah.
That's obviously wrong.
That's what I say, too.
No, that's obviously wrong.
Well, I'll give you credit. Bill Leslie, friend of the pod, says Ramses. He says it like you do.
Bill Leslie is right.
As with most things.
Yeah, I think you can just go with that on any topic. If you look it up on the internet, you will see that people used to say, I think they're talking about the Egyptian ruler or something. Like, that's as important as the man wearing the costume at the football games.
Yeah.
The more common way to pronounce it used to be Ramses, but Ramesses is gaining in acceptability. The battle continues.
Take that.
Now, another item that everyone wanted to know about, we were sent this many times, the fact that DaBaby has a new album out, and it's called Kirk. I think that's a shout-out to Captain Kirk from the Starship Enterprise.
And Kirk Herbstreit.
That's what DaBaby told me. Many people, this started with Jawad Williams, who tweeted that DaBaby, the new album, goes hard.
Adam, can you confirm?
Many people wanted to know if I could confirm this. I've now listened to the full album. I have to say, my ears hurt.
I can only imagine, like, you're sitting in your car, driving the kids to practice. Yeah, honey, no problem. I'll stop at the store and get a loaf of bread and some milk. And then as soon as you hang up the phone, it's like track 7 from Kirk into DaBaby.
Here's a mini review of Kirk for you, so you don't have to go listen to DaBaby. Many songs on this album are only about 2 minutes long.
Mm.
That's short for a song, but I think the problem was DaBaby was out of words. He had said all the words in as many combinations as he possibly could and decided he's just going to end the song right there rather than having to say something else. I strongly recommend to you, you do not listen to Kirk with any children or impressionable humans within like 3 cars from your car.
It really should be a solo experience.
Yes, and not even solo if you have sensitive ears. There's not one clean moment on that album. However, there is, shout out to Virginia, she sent me a clean version on Spotify. Mm. I gotta say, when you listen to the clean version, it almost makes sense why people like DaBaby.
Yeah,
you can almost get there.
DaBaby's growing on you.
You can almost start to think that maybe this is good. My favorite song on the album is Gospel.
Wait, so it's been so long now. Was Leaky DaBaby or Little Baby? He was Little Baby.
I think. We need to get Leaky back on.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to
update. I can't
update.
Keep my babies. I'm not up to date. I hadn't been thinking about the babies in the rap game enough lately.
I'm going to update my list soon. I'd like to get a little Leaky input, but I did want to give you a quick new hot music update.
Oh, okay.
The best DaBaby song hitting the tracks right now is actually not on Kirk.
Really?
It's his collaboration, Jones, with Post Malone.
Oh.
It's called Enemies. Mm. That actually is almost kind of a good song. Almost kind of. Like, of all the songs on Kirk, it's better than all those. So if you're looking to just stick your toe into the DaBaby swimming pool, which I don't recommend if you're going to be tested anytime soon, listen to Enemies, the collaboration with Post Malone. Also, my boy Juice WRLD, who's on the list of top five rhymers in the game, he's got a new collaboration out with Benny Blanco. I know you know Benny Blanco, old Double B.
Eastside.
Out there. That's exactly right.
Thank you.
It's called Graduation. Now, so my daughter was telling me about this song, and I said, you know, that song's a remake of a song that was popular back in the day, Vitamin C, right? Graduation, you know what I'm talking about?
I do know that song.
I hadn't heard the Vitamin C version in a while, and so I sent that to our daughter, and she sent it back as though I had poisoned her ears with like 1,000 wasps. She's like, oh, the Benny Blanco Juice version is so much better. Then I went back and listened to the Vitamin C version. That was only 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's a little dated.
It sounds like it's from another planet. Like, we went out to Mars and found this sample of their music, and here's what it is. It's Vitamin C singing Graduation.
Well, Adam, I need to, before you end this, I want to go back.
Not that that's imminent.
No, I want to go back and ask you an important question.
Okay.
So can you confirm what our boy Jawad Williams said? Does DaBaby, in fact, hashtag go hard?
What exactly does that mean? Does it mean, like, goes hard in a way that makes me somewhat ashamed to be listening to it? If so, yes.
All right.
If it means,
confirmed.
If it means it's really good, I would have to say, I'm not there yet.
Confirmed from Adam. DaBaby does, in fact, hashtag go hard.
I think DaBaby's going to drop off the list of top five rhymers in the game. There's too much trouble following around DaBaby.
Do not let DaBaby know that, Adam.
Well, that's what concerns me a little bit. Like, I know it's important to him that he's on the list of top five rhymers in the game, but he's just had an incident. Several people sent it to us. His security at a concert knocked out a female fan.
Oh, boy.
He's had some issues. A couple other songs you need to know. Just two. Okay?
I tried to get us going in a different direction.
YNW Melly featuring, I don't know how to pronounce it, but the song is called 223s. That one is almost okay. But the other one that I was recommended to listen to, Slime Mentality by Youngboy, that's the worst thing I've ever heard. Don't do it. Do not do it. No, don't listen to that. That's New Music Corner.
Anything else, Adam?
I've got a how can you justify that?
Okay. Let's go. I do not have to justify!
How can you justify what you've done?
How can you possibly justify that?
This how can you justify that goes out to a lovely little hamlet in the state of North Carolina. Mm. Randleman, North Carolina.
A whole town.
I'm very upset with you, Randleman, North Carolina.
Whole town getting put on notice.
Sunday morning, 6:45 a.m. I'm in Randleman, North Carolina,
like you often are. Yeah, like you are.
For some hot travel baseball action. Do you know how many roundabouts are in Randleman, North Carolina? Slogan of the roundabout.
Six.
Three within a quarter mile. What is happening in Randleman outside the Hardee's that they need three roundabouts?
I don't dislike roundabouts.
Well, you get back to me at 6:45 a.m. on a Sunday when you're trying to find Randleman High School.
Was there really even that much traffic?
There was no traffic except for our car.
Yeah.
So why do you need three roundabouts?
I'm guessing there is traffic at some point.
That you need three within a quarter mile?
I can't answer that, Adam. Look, I'm not informed enough on the traffic patterns of Randleman, North Carolina at this time to be able to answer this question.
I respect the triad area of North Carolina, of which I would consider Randleman to be a part. I think the people there are very nice. I think the town planners of Randleman have a little something to answer to. Mm.
Are you okay now?
Yeah, I'd like to know how they can justify that.
Okay, just one thing that I want to address from off Twitter really quickly. We got this picture where somebody had on the back of their car a bumper sticker, Tar Heel Blue, that said Friend of the Pod. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to know if this was sent to us by at K Cherry Lee, KD Twitter name. Wants to know, is this what this person thinks it is? And if so, how can they get one? These are actually, I guess, I don't even know. There's some other pod called Pod Save America.
Yeah.
I doubt it has any traction.
No.
But so they have these bumper stickers that say Friend of the Pod. But let's be honest. It can really mean whatever you want it to mean inside your own heart.
Right.
Like the Angelo interview.
Right.
It means what you want it to mean.
Right.
And so, I mean, if you feel like you need to get a Carolina Blue one, or if we want to buy a bunch of Carolina Blue ones for $5 each and then give it to you for $6. But so that is what they are. But, hey, fly your pod fandom any way you want. Who's it? We can't tell you how to live your life.
What if we purchased them in bulk and gave them to each guest who appeared on the pod and they immediately then went out and applied it to their car? Obviously, think how sought after those would be.
Yeah. See, now you're thinking, Adam. You're like, that's a very entrepreneurial thought.
Imagine what the bidding for the Lineberger Cancer Auction would go up to if they knew they were going to get a Friend of the Pod sticker only available to pod guests.
Can't stop, won't stop, Adam.
Yeah.
Adam, anything else?
No.
All right. We're back later this week. We have Georgia Tech preview. We will talk to, man, we've got a really fun interview coming up later in the week. Football guest that I think you will enjoy with some crazy stories. And you're going to see this guest later in the week and go, there's not, no way there's crazy stories on this interview.
He doesn't seem like the type of young man who'd do anything crazy.
This youngster has his head on straight. And that's true. It gets wild during this interview. Let me just go ahead and tell you. So that's coming up later in the week. Georgia Tech preview, we've got that. And probably talk a little basketball too, of course, as the Tar Heels move through the week. But for now, we are going to let the Chancellor of the University of North Carolina and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Kevin Guskowitz. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.